Today on the Grave Talks, targeted by spirits, a conversation with Brian Deetz. It started as an innocent business trip to one of the most haunted cities in the world, New Orleans. Shortly after checking into his room, Brian Deetz began feeling watched. After searching his room, Brian soon found himself the recipient of a life-changing paranormal experience that would put him on a path searching for answers. What answers he's found on his journey would change his life, as he realized that as much as he may be searching for spirits maybe targeting him.
Well, when I was a kid, thanks for having me on, first and foremost.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I had a moment where I'd woken up from a nap and my folks had gone to the store or something. And I wasn't that young. I was older, but I was still not used to being alone, especially waking up disoriented from a nap. And it was dark out. And I was a little disoriented, but I felt a lot of fear, and it was unusual amount of fear. And I went to go close a door and lock a door near the front entryway. And when I reached out for the door, it slammed closed on me, and I didn't even touch the knob. And that was probably my very first freak out moment that I thought, well, this is something. This is something going on here that's not explainable. And I didn't understand why I even felt so much fear and dread in that moment either, or to why I was even so concerned about locking not the primary house door, but a different door. So that would probably be my very first intro into that.
And so, then, you know, you were a little kid and you're feeling insecure and scared, right, for some reason, and you don't know why. So your initial reaction is to provide more security for yourself, and that's to go and lock the door. Once that door literally just slipped out of your hands and grip and slammed on its own, what was your reaction? What was going through your mind at that moment?
I ran like hell. I ran, and like most kids do, I ran to my bedroom and hid under my covers and freaked out and waited patiently, turning all the lights on in between until my folks got back from the market. They weren't gone very long, but it felt like forever when you're a kid and you're freaked out.
Did you go and tell your parents what had happened?
I did, and I don't recall the reaction. I'm sure it was more like, oh, it was probably this or that, or some kind of explain it away. Mm-hmm. I think I was more distraught and probably not making any sense trying to tell them.
Yeah. And a lot of parents would have that reaction either because they don't believe or because they're just trying to calm their child down. As you had that first experience in that house, were there other things that happened while you were young there or in other locations?
Not that I recall at that point. That one was the most potent in my mind. I have a lot of mental blocks on childhood things, unfortunately. But my adult life, as a kid, I always liked stuff like Ghostbusters, and I'm a kid of the early 80s.
Sure.
I was born in 1980. So I grew up watching Scooby-Doo every day, and I grew up, you know, watching the real Ghostbusters cartoons and stuff like that right after school every single day. And I loved the Ghostbuster movies with Bill Murray and everything else.
Sure.
And that kind of probably sparked a lifelong interest in paranormal, where I've always been drawn to all kinds of things. You know, in my 20s, I liked Anne Rice novel vampires, and you know, it just throughout, I've always been very fascinated, and I always felt like there was more to this world than what we see on the surface, and that there's got to be more that we're not seeing on a day-to-day basis, and what we're being told mostly what we're being told.
Sure.
But there's a whole other level of interesting layer to our existence that we, science, and nobody else wants to claim as true.
Tell me about, as you got older, you obviously had that childhood experience, so you kind of had a little bit of a taste of something that was bizarre and unexplainable. But I totally understand your mindset of growing up in the 80s. I was born in 82, so yeah, we had the same sort of upbringing in terms of what was around us in terms of popular culture and interest in that area, and Ghostbusters, etc. As you got older and you continued to kind of have this interest and this passion, maybe not necessarily things going on around you, but the, you know, there's the curiosity that's there, and you're drawn to those sort of things. How did you take a first step that moved you beyond just, I like watching Ghostbusters when it's on TBS, yep, to I think I want to go take a look at this a little bit deeper? What were some of your first steps in that direction?
Well, honestly, watching Ghost Adventures, mm-hmm, and certain shows on TV, I really started to take a liking to paranormal ghost stories. Mm-hmm. I binge watched everything I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
And I started to realize and wonder, you know, how much of this is television production and how much of this is legitimate, because there's just so darn much of it that's starting to spur with the internet and YouTube and other sources, not just on television and cable networks and whatnot. And it makes you start to wonder. And I didn't really pay much mind to it. I thought maybe it was all entertainment, and maybe it wasn't. And I was on a work trip in New Orleans, and it was my first time to New Orleans as an adult. And I was super excited, and I booked a hotel near Bourbon Street because I was looking forward to checking out Bourbon Street when I wasn't working. And it was the La Pavilion Hotel. And I went to Bourbon Street, and I hung out for a little bit that night. And then I went back to my room. And the whole time from when I first set foot in the hotel, I felt like I was being watched. Mm-hmm. And it really freaked me out, because I thought, well, what's going on here? And I have all my work tools and everything else with me. By this time, I'm like 28, 29. But I had all my work tools with me for a job, and I just kept feeling like, man, this place is old and it's kind of got a creepy vibe to it. And why do I feel like I'm being watched the whole time I'm here? And I actually thought at one point, I was like, do they have some kind of like hidden camera peeper cams or something going on in here? Cause it's such an overwhelming feeling of being watched that you can't shake it no matter where you go. And then I realized I'm even feeling this when I'm in the bathroom. Like, I'm feeling it in my room, I'm feeling it in the hallways, and I don't understand. And I really thought at one point, like, maybe they have some kind of weird camera thing set up. So I took my tools out and I started taking things apart, thinking I was going to find some little hidden camera somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I started opening vents, and I started taking apart lamps, and I started going, well, there's nothing here. And I still feel like I'm being watched, and even more so now that I'm taking stuff apart. I had the wildest, craziest dreams of my life that night. I've had very potent, unexplainable dreams before that stick with me for years. And then I have dreams where, you know, you forget as soon as you wake up almost, but there's been certain dreams throughout my life. And I always felt kind of weird and different, and I didn't understand why. I just thought I was weird. Mm-hmm. And maybe I am just weird. I don't know, but, I don't claim to know what's going on. But as far as that night goes, it was very peculiar. That dream in particular, I was seeing a time period in New Orleans that I had no knowledge of. Like, I like history a lot, but I had no knowledge of this weird battle scenario that I was somehow involved in, but it wasn't me, but it was me. And there was period clothing details that I couldn't have possibly fathomed. And there were all these, this wild like fight in New Orleans, like olden times. There was like a boardwalk and it was wood and there was fire. Things were on fire. And I didn't understand how the heck I could have such a weird dream out of the blue like that. And when I woke up, I felt very disoriented, like way more than usual. I had some sleep paralysis that night as well. And that's always fun.
Is sleep paralysis something that you experience on a semi-regular basis, or is that kind of every...
No.
No, okay.
It's rare. It's rare for me, but it has happened. And I used to travel around the country and Canada a lot for work. And it has happened in places like New York and New Orleans and certain places. That's been pretty... pretty scary, if I'm going to say. I don't like to use that word, but it was pretty scary stuff to not be able to scream and trying to scream and feeling like people are around you and holding you down.
Yeah.
Things like that. But in that particular case, I didn't feel held down. I just felt like I couldn't yell and break myself out of that dream. In the morning, I tried to shake it off best I could, jumped in the shower, got my tools ready, got ready for work, and I was waiting for them to pull my car around the valet, and I kept talking to myself, and I still felt like I was being watched. And I was like, why, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
What was that dream? What the heck was that? And I kept shaking my head and going, this is not right. Like there's something real, like weird going on. I was like, screw it. I'm going to sound crazy. I'm just going to ask the guy. I walked up to the clerk at the front desk and, I said, I know this sounds weird and this sounds crazy, but is this hotel haunted? And he didn't miss a beat. He said, yeah, isn't that why you stayed here? And I said, what? It turns out the La Pavilion near Bourbon Street, it's not on Bourbon Street, but it's nearby, walking distance. Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, La Pavilion. It's on a lot of top 10 haunted hotel list.
Yeah.
In the country. And I was, so anytime, so this is what I tell people, if the paranormal finds you when you're not looking for it, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And after that point, I couldn't look at the world the same way again. I had to start thinking, holy crap, this is real. And what does that mean? and now I need to know more. And then that was the deep dive at that point into all things paranormal. Everything I could get my hands on, show wise, every story I could hear from anybody, a lot of different things after that point.
Let's talk about the
back in
2007. Yeah. Let's talk about the dream for a moment. When you were in that dream, when you look back on it, was that a dream that you had control over? Like oftentimes dreams, you know, you're living your life, you're going about whatever setting you're in, but you're in control. And there's ones where it's almost like you're on rails, you're just kind of watching it as you go.
I was watching it as it happened, even though I was watching myself. It felt like an astral projection, now that I know more about paranormal and things like that. But I was watching myself, but it was not myself. Fight this battle with other people in period time clothing that I didn't know anything about, detailed buttons and, you know, the hat styles of the time and things like that. And it was far too detailed to have been my imagination.
Yeah. Let me ask you this about your mindset in that dream. And maybe you can recall this, maybe you can't. But I'll ask it anyway. When you were there and you were watching yourself, although you knew that was not you that you were watching, but you identified that that's you over there. When you were in that state, were you able to identify traits of your existing life, like whatever may be around you, friends, family? Was there any recollection of any of that? Or were you almost in this mindset, almost as if somebody wiped out, if your mind were a hard drive, they wiped it out, and now you are operating as a different person, you know, completely different mindset, completely different information, but you're alive, and this is you going forward, and you're operating as someone else.
That's right. It felt more like that. There was nothing familiar about it whatsoever to me. There was no one I knew or recognized. It was a complete, it was like someone was showing me something, their own memories is what it felt like after the fact. Even though I felt like that was me, it was not my face. It was a man and with different colored eyes, and he was pissed fighting a fight and against, I don't even know who, an adversary, while things burned down around him. And it was definitely in olden times where all the shops and stuff were like wood and brick and mortar and not what we would currently use for construction in any way, shape, or form.
Sure. And when you have an experience like that, some will look at that and say, well, maybe that was a past life. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, anything being possible in this world, but I almost kind of look at those experiences myself, and I'm interested to hear your perspective on it, as more so like a download, where suddenly, you know, you get this chunk of data of someone else's life and you're viewing it. You put the DVD in and you're watching this. And as long as you're enthralled into that moment, that is your world. And then once it's gone, it's gone. But then you have to look at it and go, why did I get this information? Why did someone show me this? Is there a purpose to that? Maybe there's not. Maybe you're just there and then you just happen to be in the stream of where this energy and this data is flowing. What are your thoughts when you look back on that retrospectively as to what you experienced? How do you define what happened to you?
I considered that. I have had some past life. Well, for one, the past life recollection things that have occurred in my own life have only occurred very recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I did look back at that and think, well, maybe it was a past life, but then I want to say it was not, because I did not relate. Like, even though I felt like it was me, but wasn't me, in more current situations where I felt I was very, very aware of which scenarios were my own from a potential past life, it resonates differently. This was more like what you said. This was a download of information. Someone else was showing me their life and their experience, and they wanted me to know their story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what that particular dream session had felt like, was that I was there getting a taste of what they went through and what they had to deal with, and the rage and the aggression and the all these strong emotions of having to fight for what you believe in. And a lot of things that at the time I was just thinking, well, I'm going to go to work the next day. You know, I wasn't looking for any of this.
Sure.
I didn't know I was staying in a haunted hotel. I didn't have any of that preconceived notion. I mean, I might've picked some preconceived notions up on the street, just walking up and down Bourbon Street. They have a lot of voodoo shops and different hoodoo shops and all kinds of fun, great things. And it was a Tuesday night on Bourbon Street. It wasn't even like a weekend or anything. It was like a Monday or Tuesday night. And I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans at any time of day on a Monday or Tuesday night, but Bourbon Street's popping every night of the week. It doesn't matter if it's Mardi Gras. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
As long as the weather's decent, things are going on Bourbon Street. That's one of my favorite places in the whole world to visit, is New Orleans, because of the rich history and, you know, getting into the paranormal. It's like you can't turn around there without bumping into someone or something related to paranormal or history or... And the food's delicious, too. I love Creole food,
sure.
Cajun food.
The history of that hotel, I'm assuming after this experience and then you launching into trying to learn all you can about this topic, what did you find about the history of the property that you were at?
Actually, it's kind of the opposite. I only started to poke at the history. I think initially I was still trying to wrap my brain around everything.
Okay.
And a part of me was really focused on my job and my career, where I couldn't allow it to deter me from my job at the time. Cause I was, you know, I had a tight deadline. I always had a tight deadline, high stress, in and out kind of a situation.
Sure.
And so I didn't allow myself the time or the mentality. I compartmentalized the whole thing.
Okay.
And when I looked at it after the fact, I found out a little bit about it, and that was that it had been a plantation at one point. It had had different part things, different things related to it, related, unfortunately, to slavery and to, you know, the South. And there's been multiple deaths, and I think there was a fire, and there were all these different things over a long course of time. It was a lot older than I thought it was. It's a fantastic building. If you ever do get the opportunity to stay there, it is absolutely beautiful. They've done an amazing job keeping it not new age. they've made it beautiful and the way that it should be retained in my mind, and not try to, well, they have obviously, you know, upgrades for hotel reasons and everything, but as far as keeping like gorgeous, you know, time period chandeliers and paintings and even just the walls and stuff. The whole place is pretty fantastic, and they have a pool on the roof, and it's a great place if you ever get a chance to stay there in New Orleans. I've been back since knowing. Mm-hmm. This time I went in knowing, but without any real equipment, and I was using a phone app and some you know, little stuff. But it was another work trip that had brought me there, and so I didn't really have a lot of time to spend. And the phone apps are always, you know, questionable. They have to be labeled as entertainment for many reasons, and sometimes that's what they are. And you know, if it was, the thing I've discovered about phone apps, or at least in my own experience, is that spirits and paranormal can interact with phone apps if they're around. However, I've also seen phone apps just generate random gibberish. Mm-hmm. Like ovulus. So you have to really use another method to verify against a phone app, unless you have multiple phones and things are just way too coincidental. Sometimes, for instance, I was on the roof and I was getting frustrated, feeling like, oh, well, this phone app's probably a piece of crap and it probably doesn't work and it's probably fake and whatever. And I had it I don't think I should mention the name of the app because I use it and I like it, but I had it on and I was starting to think like, man, this is all, you know, baloney. Mm-hmm. And I lit a cigarette and started smoking. And as soon as I did, it said cancer. And I was like, great. Okay. It's a little too coincidental for my taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Out of all the thousands and thousands of words, within 5 seconds of lighting a cigarette, it says cancer. It really makes you have to think there's some validity to some of these things, or at least that spirits are able to interact with it, whether it's randomly generated or not. Well, on some of them, I found that spirit manipulation through audio is something I really enjoy because I have kind of an audio background, career wise, mm-hmm. audio video background. And so I've found different ways of audio delay and manipulation with spirits can really, really utilize that to communicate in very amazing ways with things such as portals and ghost boxes, and, you know, even the SB7, but the SB7 plus a portal or a ghost box type thing that allows you to manipulate the audio a little more and add some reverb and some different things to it. It really changes the game. It gives them, in my honest opinion, and from messing around with the technology and trying to communicate in many places, it seems like if you can give them a little bit of extra time and a little bit of reverb and a little bit of decay and a little bit of something on top of white noise, or you can even drown out the white noise. Mm-hmm. And that's what those portals are great for, drowning out that annoying white noise. After 20 minutes, you got a headache. Mm-hmm. But if you can give them and buy them a little extra delay time, a little extra reverb, a little extra moment in there, they can manipulate that audio in amazing ways to try to communicate with you in full word sentences And that's just my own personal experience, you know, working with that kind of equipment, building it myself after buying it and checking it out and started building my own. And that's why I started SpectralSteward.com, was to start manufacturing equipment for the field. Mm-hmm. and doing variations on things.
Why do you think, and it's just an opinion-based question, when you look back on the experience, especially that initial experience in that room, we had the sleep paralysis and all of those moments that really were kind of life-changing for you. Why do you think it targeted you to give you that message? Or were you just kind of in the right place at the right time, and whoever had the keys to that room that night would have also had that same experience? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, in retrospect, I feel like I am and have always been an empath and or some form of mediumship. Mm-hmm. And I did not recognize it as such. And I've never even liked using the words for myself because I felt like, well, that's not me. That's not me. I don't have those gifts. I've never seen this. I've never heard this, you know. But I've met quite a few psychic mediums and a ton of empaths in the last few years and diving into this field. And the more that I have, the more that I realize, well, wait a minute, maybe this is part of me. I've always seemed to have a knack for, I've never really understood it, but people tend to come up to me and just start talking to me, and then they just tell me everything.
Yeah.
And I've never understood why, and I've tried to figure it out, and I don't know what that is. I feel like it's some kind of a gift that was maybe given to me. I'm not sure. From God or from wherever you want to look at. Mm-hmm. But it feels like it has a purpose, or there's a purpose behind it. There's a need, and there's got to be a reason, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't just walk up to people and just tell you their life story out of nowhere and then go, I don't know why I even just told you my whole life story. I don't even know who you are. I just met you 5 minutes ago. You know, I'm not sure what it is, to be honest. I don't know if it's something to do with empathic abilities or psychic or mediumship. I don't know. I can't seem to find a label that fits.
Yeah.
Most labels don't seem to fit anybody if you really look at them. It's always been a thing where people have always felt very comfortable talking to me and very comfortable opening up to me about very private things that, I don't know if it's because I'm non-judgmental or they see something I don't see. I tend to see the potential in people. Mm-hmm. I try to uplift people and make them realize their potential. And that's just something that's always naturally kind of occurred. And I never really thought much of it because I just kind of figured that's just how everybody was. But it's only been pointed out to me fairly recently within the last few years that no, that's not normal.
Yeah.
People.
And that's always funny when you have those moments, because to you, your whole life, that's been normal. That's just been kind of how life is. And you really, everybody doesn't have these experiences. It can be kind of an eye-opening moment, especially for something you've been so conditioned to believe is just, you know, normal. Go ahead.
That's a trick is, sorry about that. There's a lot of unlearning what we think we know.
Sure.
And I found that in the paranormal in particular, what we've been told and what we think we know and what we've assumed and all these things, if you step back and you try to unlearn what you believe that you know about the world and the paranormal and everything, you look at it with fresher eyes and it resonates very differently sometimes, different topics, if you can allow yourself to unlearn what you've been told your whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would completely agree. I think there's a lot of almost unlearning that needs to go on in this field in terms of what our expectations are and what we think we know, because a lot of us go into this, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to have more answers. You will have certainly more answers, but you're going to have more questions as well. And yep. it just makes it, you'll be more informed than you were in the past. But I always hate the term expert in this field because I get that thrown at me all the time, because we probably have more audio of ghost stories in our archive than anyone in history. But I'm not an expert. I can relate probably more stories than most could just because of the sheer volume that have come into me. But I'm by far, no one can be an expert in something that none of us can truly explain. So it's...
I would totally agree with you on that. I feel like the term expert gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
Or professional.
Yeah.
Professional is an easier definition if you look at the words. Words are really important. And if you stop to look at the roots of the words, one of my favorite authors and paranormal enthusiasts, not enthusiasts, but paranormal, paranormal professional, mm-hmm. and author is John E. L. Tenney. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but he has a great, great track record with paranormal and how I love his outlook on the paranormal in particular, because he's one to make you question the meaning and root of words. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the word, you know, expert, you know, who's really an expert at anything, right?
Sure.
They make certain, I mean, labels are a problem in everyday life.
Sure.
Expectations come with labels, and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you call someone your girlfriend and suddenly, you have expectations.
Sure.
You call someone an expert and somebody's going to make up their own expectations in their own head of what that means to them. And if you're not fulfilling those expert expectations that you know nothing about, then suddenly you're not really an expert. And it's a problem.
Yeah.
To place labels. But when you come to the term professional, that's just someone that gets paid to do something like what we're doing right now.
Sure. Sure.
Talking on the phone and whatnot, and that would be a professional. That's the definition. I mean, but if you don't look at the root of the words on some of them, those labels can really stack up pretty quick against you or for you one way or the other.
Let's talk about sleep paralysis a little bit more. I know you had the experience in that hotel in New Orleans, but I know you also said you have experiences, not frequently, but have had some throughout your life. Obviously, many people have different labels, if you will, that are attached to sleep paralysis. Some will say it's simply your mind, and it's a state of sleep, and it's kind of just that weird, you know, almost like you got your mind hacked a little bit, and you're kind of entering that state of halfway awake, halfway asleep, and it can do many weird things to you. And I believe that exists, but I also believe that maybe sometimes energies or entities can manipulate us into those states and also use them as a catalyst for whatever they may be doing or want to communicate to you. What are your thoughts on your experiences with sleep paralysis as far as what it is you experienced and why?
That's a great question. I wish I knew. I wish I knew what it was for sure.
Yeah.
That I could say for certain. I've seen sleep paralysis used, and I tried to do my homework as far as it's highly referenced with alien abduction. Mm-hmm. It's highly referenced with potential implants and a lot of different things, along with spirits and with all kinds of entities that are exactly just, that's the real root of it right there, trying to do something to or show you something or make you feel something. And then if you look at, you know, doctors and scientists, they say, well, it's like you said, your brain is half asleep and you're not fully awake and you think you're awake. And it's a moment where your brain is awake and you might be receiving information from the world, but your body is not woken up yet. And so that you're stuck kind of in your own body. Me personally, I think it varies. I feel like I've had sleep paralysis where I definitely felt like there were things around me. What those things were, I couldn't tell you. It was usually dark and I just felt presence around me. I couldn't say one way or the other if it was potentially an alien or just my own whatever. But I will say that most of the time that's happened has not been in places that wouldn't be haunted. Mm-hmm. And or in places that may very well have some kind of other interest or energy going on there. I don't recall ever having it in my home or in even growing up. I don't recall having it. As an adult, I started having it. And it was mostly when I traveled places like New York City and places like New Orleans and Long Island. I mean, there's been places where I've definitely experienced some really weird stuff that I could not explain, but did not have time to explain because I was running out the door to do my job.
Yeah.
And when it comes to experiences, I actually have a ton of experiences. I just didn't start having them until I got older. And the more I felt connected and aware of the paranormal, it's kind of like digging down a rabbit hole. The deeper you dive down the rabbit hole, the more you open your mind and the more receptive you become, in my mind. The more you allow your brain to be receptive, the more aware you are, is my experience. The more open-minded you are, the more aware you become.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a strange escapes, a three-day event. I live really close to the Oddfellows compound. It's now called the Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri.
Okay.
Beautiful, haunted place. I spent a lot of time there. But I went to a strange escape event with Amy Bruni and Adam Berry, and a lot of really great paranormal folks were there. John Tenney and Greg and Dana Newkirk, and a lot of really great folks. Chip Coffey was there in particular. And I've seen him for a decade on all the shows, you know, on Ghost Adventures and different shows. And he did a Q&A. And during that Q&A, I found myself asking questions that I didn't know why I was asking them. And they were questions along the lines of, when did you know, you know, you were sensitive, and how did you know? And then how did you train? How did you train yourself and gift? And one of his answers really surprised me. And he said he couldn't see ghosts or spirits until he was about 40 years old. He said he'd been able to speak with them prior to that, but he couldn't see them. And it changed throughout his lifetime. And that concept never resonated with me prior to that conversation. But after that conversation, it was like opening a gateway or a doorway to my own mind. And that entire three-day event with the many lectures that they had really opened my mind to many things that previously were just closed doors. And I feel like the more we explore and the paranormal and the more we learn about different things, the more doors that open in our own minds and the more that we're actually capable of perceiving and noticing. It's kind of like training any other muscle, you know. The more you use it, the better, the stronger it gets. And it's the same with sensitive and empathic abilities and, you know, telepathy, everything, anything under the sun. The more time and energy you spend giving it notice, the more you can potentially grow from it. I think that we all have gifts that we're provided with, and discovering what those gifts are is one of our purposes in life. And then figuring out how to use them appropriately is another one.
You said something earlier that I thought was a very interesting phrase, and I'd like you to expound upon what you mean by it. You said, when ghosts target you, pay attention. What do you mean by that?
I mean, if you are going to be a receiver of the other side of paranormal of any sort, I've been very blessed thus far that even in the darkest of dark, creepiest of creepiest places with the most horrific murders and everything else you could think of, I've primarily walked into it with a very positive attitude, with a very non-judgmental attitude, and with a very, thank you for letting me come to your home and let's chat a bit if you're up for it, kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into the paranormal with a more positive vibe and a more positive situation, and you don't run in and go, come out, demon, show yourself to me.
Yeah.
And you don't do stuff like that, then you're going to be more well-received. I tell people, I work with haunted rooms.com a lot. on events, and I tour people around some of the best places in the Midwest that are haunted, and do tour groups with equipment, and you know, teach people how to use the equipment, how it works, and then try to interact with whomever may be there or whatever may be there. And in my experience, if you don't go into those situations with a positive attitude and as though you were dealing with a stranger that you've never met before, and you're walking into somebody's house, you're not going to just start yelling at them, "Tell me how you died."
Yeah.
You know, because that's not going to get you. If you were to do that in a bar and you're trying to meet a new friend, you're probably going to get thrown out or looked at funny, or they're going to take off.
Yeah.
The same thing goes with the paranormal. If you go into it, at least in my experience, I should say, if you go into it with the thought process of, "Hey, show yourself because I want to put you on TV and become famous," it's not going to work.
Yeah.
If you go into it with, "Hey, I'm here and thanks for letting me come to your home, and I'd really like to just hear your story," you're going to get a lot better results.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time. I mean, you're always going to come across the occasional grumpy, angry, you know, spirit that doesn't really want you to be in their house or want you around. And sometimes, just like people, you can break those people down and you could, you know, kill them with kindness, sort of say, no pun intended there.
Sure.
But, you can, I always just try to think of it as if this person was physically standing in front of me and not on the other side because I can perceive, I have a tendency to perceive things even if I can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened especially in the Sally house in Atchison, Kansas, where I looked over at a chair and said, "Somebody's sitting in that chair."
Mm-hmm.
And then the other folks I was with, a really gifted psychic medium, Samantha Belvoir, she looked over and said, "Yeah, you're right." And then they picked up their FLIR, you know, infrared heat detector, and somebody was sitting in the chair. It was perfect, clear as day. Someone was just sitting there watching us, you know, get our equipment out and do our stuff to try to communicate.
Yeah.
And it was just quite the experience. And those little validations, you know, they go a long way. Once you start feeling validated and not feeling like, "Oh, I'm crazy."
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you get that out of your vocabulary where you're saying, "I know I sound crazy," or "This sounds crazy," just throw it away. As soon as you remove that from your vocabulary, you open your mind a million times fold, because it's like positive or negative affirmations and self-fulfilling prophecies. If you sit around telling yourself, "Oh, I can't do this, and I'm not like this, and this isn't me," then it probably won't be.
Mm-hmm.
Just from what I've experienced thus far.
It makes sense. In part two, what does Brian believe happened to him while he had his sleep paralysis experience in that hotel and other experiences in his life? When Brian says, "When ghosts target you, pay attention," what does that mean? Brian's involved in the evolving world of spirit communication technology. How is the communication improving, and where does he see it going in the future? And does spirit communication technology work the same regardless of whose hands it's all in? Until next time, for the Grave Talks, Tony Bruschi.